Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Our big-time guest here, top of the 11 o'clock hour. That is the wonderful and talented Dan Graziano, NFL insider with ESPN. He's covering the Packers, Lions, Chargers, and Raiders with the draft tomorrow night. Dan, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Dave. How are you doing?
We're all doing the best that we can in these unbelievably difficult times, I think we'd like
all
to say.
All things considered. Right.
All things considered. All right, so let's get to it. So many things to get into. Let's start with the Giants, number four overall. They've made it obviously clear that they would like to trade back. Do you expect them to be able to get that done tomorrow night?
I think it's possible. Look, I mean, I think at some point during the weeks leading up to the draft, you hear from literally every team that's picking in the first round, yeah, we'd be open to trading back, because of course you would. More picks is better, and when you trade back, you get more picks. But in the case of the Giants, I think the interest is genuine and authentic, and I think it's their top choice, because I think, you know, they're sitting there at four, and if you go back three spots, four spots, five spots, whatever, you feel like you can probably still get one of the top offensive tackles or maybe a defensive player that you have your eye on, and you can add more picks along the way. That's a little bit different from the way the Giants have drafted in the past. You know, the Jerry Reese era and early on in the Dave Gettleman era, it's been, you know, sit at the pick and take the best guy on the board. But I get the sense from talking to people in and around that team that the philosophy has shifted a little bit, and that they know how much work they have to do here rebuilding this roster, and that they're more open than usual to the idea of maneuvering around in the first round. Now, to your question of can they do it, that becomes the mystery. And I think they and the Lions are sitting there ahead of them at three, have some genuine interest in moving back, but they are not sure. Neither team is who's going to want to come up. And I don't think we're at a point where Miami's coming up for a quarterback. I don't think the Chargers are coming up for a quarterback. So you have to go down the line and say, well, are the Panthers going to come up from seven? Are the Cardinals going to come from eight? Are the Jaguars going to come up from nine to get a player they're looking at? You start moving back farther than that, and it becomes maybe not worth it. So long-winded answer, but I think there's a strong possibility that if anyone moves back, it's the Giants. I just, you know, it takes two to tango.
Hey, Dan, I mean, have you heard anything about potentially a team moving up into the top five for a defensive player, or is it going to be strictly for a quarterback?
I think, I think if you look at a team like a Jacksonville that has two first-round picks and maybe feels more free to maneuver, I think that's a team you could look at as a potential candidate to slide up into that top five. That could be for a quarterback. I mean, they might want to hedge their bets on Gardner Minshew, but it could also be if they want to make sure they get, you know, their top receiver choice or their top defensive player choice. I think it's possible. I think Carolina at seven has its eyes on some defensive players, and if they were to worry that their list were going to dry up before seven, you might be able to get them interested. And we've heard, I think Chris Mortensen reported earlier this week that, you know, like the Atlanta Falcons are very interested in moving up to try and get a cornerback. Can they get all the way from where they are to five? Would be a pretty big move and a difficult one. But, you know, those are the kinds of surprises you have your eye on. I think the team that keeps popping out to me is Jacksonville at nine. They have a lot to do. They have some veterans on the trade block, and they have a couple of first-round picks. So I think they might be a little bit nimble this weekend.
Dan, both local teams have been linked to the offensive tackle prospects throughout the pre-draft process. From what you're hearing, who's going to be the first tackle off the board tomorrow night?
Oh, man. I think Tristan Wirfs from Iowa is the hottest name right now. I'm not sure the extent to which the reports of Mekhi Becton and a bad drug test are going to hurt him. But man, this is an eye of the beholder thing. I mean, people might think the Alabama guy is the best, you know, people might think the Georgia guy is the best. So I think that the name you hear the most when it talks about teams picking up high is Wirfs. I think he's been connected to the Giants. He's been connected to the Cardinals at eight. So if you had to bet one way or the other, he might be the way to go right now. But I think it really depends on who's doing the evaluating. And I think the list of the top tackles, if you lump the four of them together, I think the order of that list would change depending on which team you're talking to.
Dan Graziano with us here, 98.7 ESPN. You mentioned in passing the Jaguars, and you said, you know, some veteran players they might move on from. One that a lot of people in New York, both Jets and Giants fans, are very intrigued by is Yannick Ngakoue. Do you anticipate him being dealt by the close of this weekend?
I think yes. I think most likely he's dealt. I mean, unless the Jaguars just want to be super hard-headed about it, I think they probably end up having to take the best offer on the table this weekend, or else what they're going to get in return is 2021 picks. And that, you know, that's a little bit – teams generally like to have their picks right now when they know what they're going to be. So, yes, I think he gets moved. It's tricky, though, because anybody who's acquiring him knows they're going to have to sign him to a contract worth, you know, $20 million a year or more, and that affects what you want to give up in trade. So Jacksonville trying to find a trade partner that will give them what they want and has also been willing to sign the player – that's easier said than done. So, yes, I think it's most likely that he's traded by the end of this draft, but it's a tricky situation. Great player, productive player, still they just turned 25 years old 3 weeks ago. So he's a player a lot of teams would like to bring in. But do you give up a high second round? Let's say you're the Giants. Do you give up a high second round pick and then know that you have to commit that much money to him? It's a difficult evaluation for teams to make.
Dan Graziano joins us here on the show. Dan, one of the teams that you'll be covering during the draft is the Las Vegas Raiders. What do you think? I mean, as far as John Gruden is concerned, he inherited Derek Carr. They ended up signing Marcus Mariota. You think this is the draft where he makes a decision to pick his quarterback or no?
I think no. But again, yeah, these are all educated guesses. I hope everybody who's listening understands that. I think once we get past the first two picks, it's hard to really know exactly what's going to happen. Mike Mayock, the GM, was on a conference call with us last week. He said they're very, very happy with Derek Carr. They're very excited about the idea of Marcus Mariota as the backup. I think the odds are that they don't go quarterback early in this draft because they feel like they have a solid quarterback room. Now, they could be lying to us. Teams do. This is no offense if Mike Mayock or John Gruden hears this. I'm not accusing anyone of anything. Everybody engages in subterfuge this time of year. But if they're to be taken at their word, then they like the quarterbacks they have, and I'd be surprised if they took one early in this year's draft. They do need help at receiver. They could use a cornerback. They got two first round picks. They should be able to come out of them with two very good players. One could be a quarterback, but I think the odds are against it.
Dan, you've got a great article on ESPN.com of the 10 NFL veteran players that could get traded this weekend. Dave already asked you about Yannick Ngakoue, but of the names that are on this list, who's the guy that's most likely to be dealt and who's the guy that's least likely to be dealt?
I think Washington has to trade Trent Williams. It's clear that he's not going to play for them. They tried to trade him last October, couldn't get it done, but they were asking a lot. I think at this point, knowing exactly what the pick is you're getting back, as opposed to doing it in October, you're speculating on what the team's record will end up being. I think that's probably the most likely guy to get traded on the list we did. Although I do also expect Ngakoue and probably Matthew Judon, the pass rushers, to go. But I'm going to rate Trent Williams at the top. Least likely, I think when all is said and done, we had Alshon Jeffrey on here. I think the Eagles would like to move him, but I'm not sure they're going to be able to. I think when all is said and done, I think the Jets can work something out with Jamal Adams. I mean, I know it's not 100%, but I still think this is a player that you build around on the defensive side. And I know there's been some acrimony, but I would lean toward long-term deal with Adams versus a trade for Adams if I had to pick one of those two sides.
All right, one of the teams that you cover or are covering for the network tomorrow night is the Lions, and they have the third selection. That's kind of really where a lot of people feel the draft starts, and Giants fans are certainly interested to find out what direction Detroit goes in. A two-pronged question here. Do you think they stay at three, and if they do, do you think it's Okuda, Brown, or someone else?
I think they stay at three because I just don't think they're going to get the deal they want to move down. If they move down, I don't think they want to go past like six or seven. So I think they probably stay put, and I think they probably take a defensive player. And at this point, I don't think it's going to be Okuda. It could be. I know they like him, but there are other defensive players that I think they like more. I think Derek Brown from Auburn is certainly on their list. A couple other guys, you know, Isaiah Simmons is a guy that I think they probably have their eye on. So Okuda is a possibility, but the more I dig in on this, the less certain I am than all the mock drafts seem to be that he's the guy. So then I was doing Jordan Renan's podcast with him last week, and he the hypothetical, if the Lions pass on Okuda, do the Giants have to take him, right? I mean, they took a first-round cornerback last year. Would they do it again? GMs I talk to think that, you know, that range of the draft, 3-4, is pretty high for a cornerback, but A, he's a special player, and B, it seems like he and C.J. Henderson from Florida are the clear top two in this year's draft. So if you really want one, you may have to take him up that high.
Dan Graziano joins us during the show. One of the other teams, too, is the Green Bay Packers. I have to imagine, Dan, knowing Aaron Rodgers a little bit, that he wouldn't be overly excited if Green Bay decided to use their first-round pick on a quarterback. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Although the GM, Brian Gutekunst, was talking to us earlier this week on a conference call, and he said, you know, he's had that conversation with Rodgers, and Rodgers understands the organization's philosophy, which is that you sort of always draft a quarterback if you have one in front of you, you think it's going to be special, because you just can't have too much at that position. You can't win without it. So I think Rodgers, having been the guy that they did that with years ago when they had Brett Favre, would understand the situation. But certainly thinking about, if you're Aaron Rodgers, think about trying to win more Super Bowl titles before you retire, you're thinking about how can I get the best team around me this coming year, and you're thinking about get me a receiver, get me a pass-catching tight end, get me somebody who's going to help me score more points on offense. You took care of the defense last year in free agency. Let's see if we can beef up the offense this year.
Dan, the Miami Dolphins have 14 picks this year, including 5 in the first 56. Now, one would think that they're not going to have a 14-player draft class, and they've seemed like they're resistant to moving up, especially early in the first round. So what exactly are the Dolphins going to do with all that draft pick ammunition?
Dominate, right? I mean, like, the whole point was to get as many high picks as possible so that they could have as much control as possible over the draft. So if you do need to go up a spot or two spots, you have the ammunition. If you want to move back, they're going to be able to be as nimble and agile through the early rounds as any team in the league. And that's what you want to be when you're drafting. I mean, no one knows how these guys are going to play, like any of them. Like everyone's guessing, even the best talent evaluator. So the best way to do it is to maximize the value of each pick, to know if you have the ability to move back. They have so many picks that they could move back with their eye on a guy, and then if they start to think in the meantime, oh, he might be going sooner than we thought, they could move back up. So I think the Dolphins are in a great spot. Obviously, they have to execute it. Obviously, this is a GM in Chris Greer that's very highly thought of, but, you know, hasn't had a lot of experience doing this, so we'll see how he executes it. But they are in position to do kind of whatever they want in the early rounds, with the exception, of course, they're not going to be able to get their hands on Mr. Joe Burrow, who will be gone at number one.
ESPN NFL insider Dan Graziano joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. All right, so we haven't talked about the Jets outside of Jamal Adams with you as far as their 11th overall pick. Well, what do you think? You think offensive lineman? I mean, certainly that's Joe Douglas's pedigree, that he was an offensive lineman. He promised Darnold's parents he would shore up the offensive line. Is that what you think, 11 overall for the Jets?
If they stay at 11, I feel confident saying, you know, offensive line or receiver. They could have their pick of the receivers. And if that's the case, obviously they could use some help in that position as well. So much like with the Giants, where I think, you know, they lean offensive tackle, I think you look, if you're the Jets, and you say, we have our young quarterback, we need to do as much as possible to maximize him. And in Sam Darnold's case right now, he needs help at the tackle position. He needs help at the receiver position. So I think if the Jets stay put, they're in a good spot at 11. There might be a receiver gone by then, but even if there is, you know, let's say that CeeDee Lamb goes to the Jaguars at 9. You can still have, you know, Jerry Jeudy. You can still have Justin Jefferson. You can still have Henry. I mean, there's all kinds of receivers in the first round. So whatever your preference is in that, at that position, the Jets are probably going to be in a position to select it. So, yeah, I don't think it's 100% tackle, because I think, you know, they could have their eye on some of these receivers. But I think they're in a good spot either way, because they need both, and they should be able to get a difference maker at one of those positions in that spot.
Dan, one of the teams that has kind of been rumored to maybe move up to get their quarterback or get a quarterback is the New England Patriots. What do you think they end up doing tomorrow in the first round?
Well, I think if a quarterback they like starts to slide, and it's probably going to have to get to the mid-teens for them to get up from where they are, and then I think they probably make a move to do it. Because as much as they like Jarrett Stidham, you know, if you have a guy that you think is going to be special, you had the opportunity to get him, even if you like Jarrett Stidham, you have to recognize there's uncertainty that goes along with him and his future. So you hedge your bets. I think New England's roster needs a lot of help. But most of the teams you talk to are looking at it and saying, look, this to ask any rookie to come in this offseason, we're not going to be together very much. We don't know how much training camp we're going to have, if any. We don't know when the season will start, if at all. So I think a lot of teams are looking at, if I'm choosing between a guy that can be a cornerstone for me for years versus a guy that can help me win right now, I'm going to lean toward the former. So while the Patriots roster for 2020 needs some work, I still think if they have the opportunity to get a guy they think can be a franchise quarterback, a Tom Brady successor in the first round, that they would probably rather do that than get the immediate contributor, because the immediate contributor is as big a wild card as ever, given the external circumstances.
Dan, Jerry Jones came out yesterday and said it's highly unlikely that the Cowboys trade away their first-round pick for a veteran NFL player. If they stay at 17, what direction are the boys going to go in?
I'm pretty confident the Cowboys are looking defense in that round, probably the first couple of rounds. A pass rusher who might be there, like Chaisson from LSU. If not, maybe a cornerback if C.J. Henderson is still there. Maybe, Diggs, the Alabama kid who's Stephon Diggs' brother. So I think the Cowboys look at the defensive side of the ball as the one where they need the most help short-term and long-term. So I would expect them to devote their draft resources, their high-end draft resources on that side of the ball and try and shore up that pass rush if they can and that secondary if they can.
All right, Dan, last one for me. We're not going to hold you to it, but I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. For prediction's sake only, who do the Giants take at 4? Who do the Jets take at 11?
I think the Giants will take an offensive tackle, and I've always said it was Becton all along, but as much as you hear Wirfs, I think from the people I trust, I'm going to lean Wirfs. So my prediction for the Giants will be Tristan Wirfs, and my prediction for the Jets will be Jerry Jeudy.
All right, Dan, last one for me, and this has nothing to do with the NFL draft. I just wanted to...
on my picks. I wanted to know who liked it.
No, your picks are good.
I like it. So let me just follow up quickly with that, because we discussed it earlier. Do you think the Giants are unable to move back, or you just think if they stay at 4 that that's who they'll take?
No, I thought my assignment was keep them at 4 and make a pick.
It absolutely was. You followed direction beautifully, but I'm following up to that with, do you think they do move back, or do you think they stay at 4?
I think it's hard to move back. So if I have to make a prediction on that, my prediction will be, given how difficult it is to move back, given their history, that they stay at 4. Not impossible they move back, but I think it's more likely that they don't.
So 3 predictions really there. Giants stay at 4, Giants take Wirfs, Jets take Jeudy.
Right. So depending on what happens, you guys call me on Friday morning and maybe I'll have changed my number.
All right. Go ahead, Rick.
All right, first I want to just say the beard looks tremendous. I just want to say that, get that out of the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. How hell-bent do you think the Los Angeles Chargers are in taking a quarterback with that 6th overall pick? Are they married to taking a quarterback in the first round?
Absolutely not. I think hell-bent would be a poor description of the Chargers on anything. I'm talking to people there and around that team. They have a large group of people that they like. They would welcome a chance to move back. They're just not sure they can. And I don't think it's out of the question that they would take a quarterback if the one they like is there. They definitely like Tyrod Taylor, but, you know, he's not necessarily their long-term bet. So, yeah, if you have your long-term guy sitting there, maybe you take him and think about him beyond this year. But, no, I think they have a crying need at left tackle. They could certainly be in the mix for those guys, any number of defensive guys that could help them. And I think they feel like they're a team whose roster is in pretty good shape, which – you know, means you can take whoever you think is the best guy, regardless of position. Now, again, they could use a tackle and add a difference maker there, and they could use maybe a long-term quarterback if we assume Tyrod Taylor is not that. But, no, I don't think it's a sure thing they take a quarterback. people I talk to are all over the map on what the Chargers are going to do. But I think there's a lot of options there for them.
All right, Dan, listen, we appreciate it. Have a great draft coverage and all the work that you do tomorrow night. If you're right, if the Giants stay at 4 and they go worse and the Jets stay 11 and they go Judy, we will definitely have you on Friday morning.
I look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Good stuff. That, of course, is Dan Graziano. Does really just a terrific job covering the draft in the NFL. You know, he was Renan before Renan.
Yeah, my first radio show at the station that I drove the show, you know, what you do for our show was
Well, hang on, you drove a show?
Yeah, I've driven the show a couple different times, but that was really? my first foray into driving the actual show was with Dan. I'd never met him either.
How'd that go?
I'd never met him.
Was it seamless?
It was interesting. No, it was not seamless. I mean, it was probably the polar opposite of seamless. I mean, you know how amped up I get. I mean, how much anxiety I had. So I was nervous to begin with. Never had met Dan. Just, I mean, briefly talked. So he comes in. I have, you know, the whole desk is full of Giants notes, Jets notes, all of it. And then 30 seconds before the show is going on the air, the New Jersey high school football team having their season canceled because of the hazing. That hit. So that's what we had to open the show with.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And that was the first time you'd ever driven a show?
Ever. First time.
And that's the story you had to lead with.
Nightmare.
Oh,
so,
God.
Dan, you've been hazed?
Right. What kind of hazing do you prefer? Oh,
my God. I had nothing. Nothing.
Oh, my God. That's not easy.
Let's go to the calls.
Let's go to the calls. 800-919-3776. All right. Good stuff from Dan, as always. We'll watch him tomorrow. Packers, Lions, Chargers, and Raiders. I think it's interesting, though, the one thing that he did say about the Chargers is that he doesn't think that by any stretch that they're not that they're not in the market, but they're not going to force a quarterback at 6 overall, Chris.
Well, I mean, if you really did want to get a quarterback, if your plan was to come out of this with a signal caller no matter what, then why would you leak your plans out there? Why would you let that be known? You wouldn't. You'd throw up a smokescreen just like everybody else, and you'd hold your cards close to the vest. And I think that's exactly what the Chargers are doing. Both them and the Dolphins want a young quarterback. Now, whether or not they're going to be able to get their guy remains to be seen. We don't know how this is all going to play out, but I would be shocked if the Chargers didn't come out of this thing with a quarterback in the first two rounds.
Yeah, I would be surprised with that. Now, in these trying times, very important to remember we pull together as a community. Small businesses all over are going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you are a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, let us know. Send us an email to 987ESPN@gmail.com. Let us know your story so we can pass the word along to help our community. 800-919-3776. We'll hear from Bob Costas in a moment. He was on ESPN Chicago yesterday. And to follow that up, he's going to be on the K Show today at 5:30. So we're 90 seconds out from hearing Bob Costas. But let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, Dave. Good morning, fellas. Boy, I tell you, this the Buccaneer with the Brady and the Gronkowski additions, it's going to be fascinating to see what Arians does with that. And, you know, Todd Bowles had that defense playing pretty well towards the end of the year. So as much as I hate the Pats, I'll tell you one thing. I know it's not realistic. Could you just imagine a Patriot-Buccaneer Super Bowl? That would be...
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable.
In Tampa.
It was just amazing. But I could see Gronkowski, if he stays healthy, and you give him 30 catches, a half a dozen touchdowns. I think Arians will use him the right way. And with the Pats, you know, I'm scratching my head at quarterback. You know, I just don't see them going into the season with Stidham. I don't buy it. I don't believe it. Whether they, you know, move up to get a quarterback, when they get one in the later rounds, whether they get a guy like Andy Dalton. I just can't believe that Stidham's going to be the opening day starter for the Patriots. I'm not sure how you guys feel about that.
Well, I think it just depends on what happens in the draft on Thursday night. I mean, I think if the Patriots can get their hands on a quarterback that they feel good about, you know, turning the reins over too early, then that'll be the situation. If one of those top guys slides outside of the top 10, then I think the Patriots have enough ammunition to be able to get up in the teens and get somebody. But if they don't, they're still going to have fallback options in veteran players like Andy Dalton. We'll see what happens with Cam Newton. But I don't think this is the time for the Patriots to panic about a quarterback.
Probably not, but they still have to get somebody because I don't buy they're going with this kid. And then one thing, I don't know if you guys saw this. I see there's some type of story out there with Trent Williams possibly getting traded to the Bucks for O.J. Howard. I think that would be make sense right now. You need a stud left tackle. I'm not sure who the left tackle for the Bucks is for Brady. And you know what? I get it. They could go the Baltimore route with the tight ends, but quite frankly, if they could swap O.J. Howard out for Trent Williams, I think the Bucks would do it in a heartbeat.
I said that in the first hour. The only problem with Trent Williams is if you trade for him, you have to sign him. You have to try to make the money work. That's the only concern. It makes perfect sense.
And Howard makes no money.
Howard makes $2 million, and then you have to decide whether or not you're going to pick up his fifth-year option. But Trent Williams is wanting. I mean, he's going to want to get paid. But if you're the Bucks,
I think Tampa can make it work, though. I think with their current,
they'll make it work.
Yeah, with
they'll make it work if they want to make
it
work. I mean, if you're sitting there at 14 and there's no tackles left, then maybe that's a decision that you have to make.
Yeah, and I could see it. And you know what? With us, with the Jets, you know, listen, I trust Douglas. Whichever way he goes, you know, tackle, receiver, whatever it's going to be, it's going to be. You know, I think we're going to get a player. But I'm not ruling out of them trading down a couple of spots. It wouldn't shock me. If he sees the same value between 14 and 16 that he could get at 11, I could see the guy moving down.
Well, we'll find out. I mean, we're not far off now. 7 o'clock tomorrow night right here on 98.7 ESPN. Good stuff from Ira. All right, Rick, did you happen to hear or see what Bob Costa said on ESPN Chicago yesterday?
I did see it. I'm actually excited to see what happens with Bob versus Don today, this afternoon, when they go back and forth debating.
Yeah, that'll be at 5:30. That's gonna. He's terrific, Costas. So you heard what he said. Here it is. Let's play it. Bob Costas, ESPN Chicago, does not expect sports back this calendar year.
I think there's a very good chance. None of us knows for sure. It's all guesswork. I think there's a very good chance that there will be no team sports at all in America in 2020. No continuation or conclusion of the hockey or basketball seasons. No baseball season. And no NFL season. Mm-hmm. I think college sports, college basketball, college football are definitely out because in many cases there won't be any students on campus at all. And these are not salaried employees. They have no union. They have no protections. Just can't do it. Is it possible that baseball could resume? Yeah. And every commissioner in every sport has to have contingency plans, best case scenarios, worst case, and everything in between.
So here's the thing. We know he's spitballing, but Bob Costas is a really smart guy and really tied in. And to hear him say that, Rick, right or wrong, I don't know. It's just kind of a punch to the stomach to think of not having sports for the rest of the 2020 season.
Yeah, I choose to believe and be optimistic that we're going to see the NBA restart, the NHL restart, and at some point Major League Baseball. The other thing, though, that would concern me a little bit, and if I'm, you know, one of these commissioners, depending on who you listen to, I mean, I read a story yesterday from the CDC that they expect, you know, this thing to come back in the winter and to be worse. So, I mean, that affects now all of a sudden the upcoming NBA season, the upcoming NHL season. Do you try to find a couple month window here where, if it's possible, if it's safe enough to at least get the rest of this season, the rest of this season finished up, go right to the playoffs, get crowned a champion, because you really don't know what next season's going to look like now if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would give you some urgency to try to get back and finish up those seasons. You just don't know how next year will be impacted by the virus, whether we see another spike once we get to the fall or not. But I have a hard time believing what Bob Costas said, and I know he's tied in and I know he's reputable, but to have no sports until 2021, no team sports, I don't know, guys. I just don't see that. I mean, you look at South Korea, their baseball league is picked back up and the virus started there early January. So I'm looking at this and I understand that we've taken drastic measures with the social distancing and trying to put in precautions to flatten the curve. But I just have a hard time believing that we're not going to see team sports, especially when you have the president of the United States say that he wants sports to come back sooner rather than later.
Listen, I desperately hope you're right, but you can see how you couldn't. I mean, if we don't clear the hurdle in the next couple months that you can get baseball or basketball or hockey back on, and then there's the potential of this thing, you know, rearing its ugly head again in October, November. I mean, I hope it's not true, but you could see the avenue that we could not see sports for a long time.
Yeah, but I think you're more likely See, here's where I disagree. I think you're more likely, and again, who knows? I mean, the timeline is dictated by the virus. I mean, that ultimately how this thing is gonna end up. But I mean, I think it's probably more likely to get the NBA and NHL back before you figure out what you're doing with Major League Baseball. Because I mean, you're talking about jumping right, you jump right back into the playoffs. So now, I mean, you're not talking about a five month commitment from your players. So if it does, you'll have to be quarantined.
And you're not talking about all the players.
Not all the players, exactly right. You're competing for a championship, so you're more likely than not to make the sacrifice to be quarantined somewhere. And who knows how long it ends up being. You lose in the first round, you go home. You lose in the second round, you go home. If you're lucky enough to be there, I mean, you want to be there for as long as possible, don't you? If you're trying to win a Stanley Cup or an NBA
championship, yes.
So I think it's more likely to see that than maybe baseball, just because, I mean, between Mike Trout, Clayton Kershaw, it seems like you're going to be hard-pressed to get guys to make a commitment to be away from their families for, 4 or 5 months, that long of a time period.
The thing that he says that I think rings true, which stinks, but I think it makes sense, is how do you bring college sports back in the fall? I mean, and it sounds like the plan might be just to push college football to the spring, which is great. But, I mean, realistically, can you have 80,000 people and college football and kids on campus and playing?
No, well, you're not going to have fans in the stadium. But the question is, are you going to have the students on campus? And if colleges and universities can't justify having the students on campus because they deem it to be unsafe, then how can you, in good conscience, allow these fall student athletes to participate in sport? You just couldn't. It wouldn't make any sense. And I think that would be an admission by collegiate athletics that this is more about the athletes not being students, but more about being workers, cogs in a billion-dollar a year machine. I mean, the business of college football is a $4 billion entity. And so for them to delay that or to have to cancel a season, you're talking about the loss of a lot of revenue. So I can understand why they would want to try to push to have it back. But if you don't have students on campus, you're not going to have college football. Not this fall.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah, but here's the thing, though, too. I mean, let's be completely honest and be transparent. If it financially made sense for college football to have games with no fans in attendance, they would bring the football players back. They would push for that. But it doesn't make sense because, I mean, you're talking about 100,000 people at these games. So financially, it makes the most sense because it's not the NFL where they have so much TV revenue, is to have the season start when you can actually have fans in the stands and make that money.
Well, the majority of their revenue does come from television, though.
Majority, but it's not the same as the NFL. I mean,
the NFL is a $15 billion business. It's a different number altogether.
But it's a humongous percentage. I think the percentage I heard was that like 93% or something crazy like that is TV revenue, as opposed to when you look at college football gate. I think they said it's close to almost 50%. The money that some of these schools make is on the gate. That's a big difference.
It's a huge difference. Now, and if you can appropriately sandwich it in there in February, March, April, May, in that window, why would you not if you actually could have fans back and have the games being played?
No, you would. I mean, you would. And I mean, let's not pretend like this is about the students. This is about how much money they're going to make. I mean, if they had the same model as the NFL, where a majority of their money was TV money, then they would, I mean, they'd find a way to get the players back.
Yeah, and they'd play in empty stadiums.
But that's the part of it. How, what's the way that they could get the players back? That's the part of it that doesn't make sense to me. That's still a major hurdle that they would have to cross. Like, how would you rationalize putting student athletes in that situation if you're saying that you can't have students on campus because of the risk of the transmission of the virus?
Because I can't control the other students. I can control my football team. I'm not talking about all. I mean, let's face it; they could care less about all fall sports. They're concerned about one sport, and that's football.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so but
I mean, it's actually safer if you bring all the football players back, keep them, I mean, in an empty campus, have them all tested when they come back, and then keep them in an empty campus. You're probably, I mean, you're more likely to keep them safe that way as opposed to having everyone on campus.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is how they wouldn't be safer than they would be at home. That's what I'm saying. That's what it comes down to.
I don't know about that. I mean, I guess, but I mean, as far as
well, if you're saying that the regular students are safer not being at school but being at home and doing online courses, how could you then say, well, we feel like the football players would be safer if they came to school versus staying at home with the rest of the student body? That's the part of it that doesn't make sense to me. That's the part where
the football players are making you money. Because the football program is making you money. It's not, I mean, it's you're making the argument that, like, you think that they really care about the health of the student athlete.
No, I know, Rick, you know, I know they don't care about the health and well-being of the student athlete. I understand that, but I'm just saying they at least try to protect the guise of it being about the education, the opportunity, institution of higher learning, all of that stuff. I mean, this would be a de facto admission that it's more of the student athletes being employees of the university versus, you know, amateur athletes.
Well, maybe that's just because there's so much money involved, and what it would, I mean, if you did have to cancel the season, what it would actually do to these schools in the amount of sports programs, period, that would need to be shut down and scholarships and everything else. Maybe that's a bridge that they're going to have to think about crossing and stop pretending.
Yeah, maybe.
Reality. I mean, that's the reality of it. I mean, that they're not student athletes. The football player and basketball programs are what make these schools go and what pay for all the other sports programs.
Absolutely. All of them.
Yeah, but I don't think
all
you can.
Of them.
Yeah, and I get that, Dave. I know that they pay for all of them. It's football and basketball. I get that they subsidize all of the other athletic programs that are there, but I don't think that you put the football players or the basketball players at a higher risk than those other athletes that aren't in revenue generating sports just because of the dynamic and the economics of the situation. That's the part of it that I don't agree with. That's the part of it that they would absolutely be admitting if they end up doing that, which is having fall sports without students being on campus. And that's just not right.
Yeah, but they would make the argument that they're actually, this, it is safer. Like, this would be safer.
Why? Because there's no one else on campus?
Yeah, it'd be the same argument you're making too. I mean, and again, it's not apples to apples because professional athletes get paid. But, I mean, they're looked at the same way. Let's be honest. The NCAA looks at, it's not student athlete. We all know that. We understand that. They would make the argument that it's safer for the athlete to be back at school, no one at school but the football program with the team, you know, team trainers and doctors. Everyone's been tested. The same line that they give, you know, NBA, NHL, and in Major League Baseball. We'll have our own little quarantine situation, and then, you know, we'll play games with no one in the stands.
Yeah, but the players are knowingly agreeing to doing something like that. Like, all of these conversations about returning to sports, you're talking to the NBPA, you're talking to the NFLPA, you're talking to the MLBPA, like, there is no union for college athletes. And so where is their representation in all of this? That's the part of it that just doesn't make sense to me. So if you talk about trying to get these fall sports, you know, underway without students being on campus, I just don't understand how a university could rationalize that and say, well, we think the athlete, the student athlete is safer on campus than they are at their own homes. We're saying everybody in society is safer being at home than anywhere else, except for college football players. How does that make sense?
It doesn't make any sense, but I could see college trying to push that through anyhow because they want to get the games, because you talked about it.
That's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, it might be ridiculous, but it's like you said, a $4 billion product.
Okay, that's the message we want to send. If you're Mark Emmert in the NCAA, we're telling everybody else to stay at home and stay safe, except for the guys that generate the money.
Right,
we don't
do
care about their safety and well-being.
So noon hour, big noon hour. I mean, the tremendous pressure on Rick already with observations at 12:30. I mean, we had the police officer call and say it's his favorite segment. Don't ever stop it, and he loves every day at 12:30.
Yeah, I mean the level of anxiety right now. I mean, I'd be sweating, but I don't have any clothes on currently, so it's not a big deal. But
nothing at all.
No, I'm stark naked at the moment.
I'm 4 weeks Friday that I haven't put pants on, only shorts.
I switched it up today. I was going to go with the daily sweatpants, but I was like, you know what? A little warm today. You have sun coming through the windows. Yeah, I just try to get some vitamin D. Just let it all hang out for a minute.
There you go. Nice.
Yeah. I mean, why
pants
wouldn't I take advantage?
Pants are very, very optional right now.
Restrictive, I think.
Very, very optional right now. All right, so we'll hear from Isaiah Simmons in the noon hour. We'll get into J-Lo and A-Rod and the Mets in the noon hour. We've got Chris's scalding hot take in the noon hour, Nobservations in the noon hour, and we'll hear from the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, also in the noon hour. So a very busy noon hour coming your way. Let's go to Mike in California. Mike, you're next up on 98.7. Mike?
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air, Mike.
Oh, hey, man, sorry. pick up a speakerphone. I was listening to your other segment, and Canty was, you know, kind of breaking down the argument with the NCAA and the student athletes and whether they would bring them back, and he doesn't agree with that. So just to, because I might have come in late on the conversation, are you guys actually, like, in favor of the NCAA bringing these student athletes back to kind of play while college is out?
No.
I'm not.
No, I don't think anyone's in favor of it. But I could see, I mean, I could see them trying to explain it. I mean, trying to explain why they are.
Right. Do you think that's a solid argument, though? Or do you think?
No, I think that's, no, I think that, that, no, no. And I don't think, I think what the point was, if it financially made sense to have the football teams come back with no students on campus, I mean, that's, I don't trust the NCAA. I think they would do it. I just think financially for them, it makes more sense to push the season into the spring where they can actually have people at the games. Because that's where they make a lot of their money.
Right, but there's no, if this nonsense is still going on, there's no argument to have people together, right? So that eliminates that whole student-athlete argument that they have been using for years to justify not paying these athletes, generating all these billions of dollars. But I really think that just that if it's even being considered, you know, it blows up this whole billion-dollar industry where now they're liable for the health and safety of these kids who technically shouldn't be there in the first place because there's no college, right? There's no school going on. So mm-hmm. if you're not an athlete, you're not a student athlete, you're just an athlete, an unpaid athlete that isn't being able to take advantage of this great education they're offering you while you participate in this organized activity. So, again, I came into the argument late. I was kind of flipping around out here in Cali. And I check in on New York stations from time to time, and I heard that argument, and I was like, wait a minute. Are they, like, really pushing for student athletes to get back to playing ball while we're going through this pandemic? And I just wanted a little bit of clarification. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, no, I don't think any of us are a proponent of pushing the season to go on. In fact, Rick, I would say sooner than later, if I was the NCAA and Mark Emmert, I would push the football back to the spring. I don't think there's any reason to have us holding out hope that you're going to see football in August because it's just unrealistic right now.
No, I agree with you. I'm just making, the point I'm making is I think that, you know, we all realize, you know, if we're being honest, what, I mean, that, you know, the NCAA treats, you know, college football and basketball players as professional athletes. They just don't get paid. They try to pretend like, you know, they're student athletes, but I mean, they're not. That's not what it's all about. It's about money.
And that's the part of it that concerns me because you have this body that is supposed to protect the best interests of the student athletes, but they're also the body that benefits the most from college football and basketball games being played because they generate so much money. So I do think there's an inherent conflict there, and it only gets exacerbated by the fact that we're in unprecedented times and we're dealing with a global pandemic. So, I mean, there's so many unknowns. There's so many variables. I know we're talking about college football and making more sense for it to be played in the spring. But even then, there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to have gatherings of 60, 70, 80,000 people.
None. So, but only thing I'll say is there's a better chance of having 60, 70, 80,000 people in March than there is in September right now.
Well, you say that, Dave, but if the virus spikes again, which is what a lot of people that are responsible for public health think, if that happens again in the wintertime, I mean, who's to say that we're not in the same exact place when we start talking about having sports events next winter, you know, January, February, March?
We could. I mean, the truth is, Rick, we have no idea. We sit here and we speculate. We hear from Bob Costas and we hear from Goodell and we speculate on it. We really, truly have absolutely no idea where we're going to be in September, December, March, or anything.
No, you have no idea. All you're trying to do is buy yourself time. That's it.
Yep.
Until you get some answers.
Exactly the case.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.